I got a question. Do you think you're ready for this night train? You know that's right. It's season 4, episode 8 of Psych and this podcast, and it starts right about now.
I've heard it both ways.
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 Be the best character in the episode. And welcome back to I've Heard It Both Ways. I'm your friendly neighborhood backcracker, Dr. Joe, riding shotgun in the blue bear with me, as always, is my partner in crime, Bully D. Williams.
Ooh.
And Bully, how you doing, my friend?
Well, if you think you're ready for this night train, think again. I'm also known as Johnny Murdoch today. Well, I looked it up to see if there was any kind of connection. He was a men's basketball player in like 1995. I couldn't figure out, like, it's just maybe just a good name. He played for Missouri State.
Well, you know what it is? Like, when you hear the name Johnny Murdoch and her character specifically, it feels like something out of, like, the Maltese Falcon.
Out of an old, good, like, noir.
Hello, Myrtle. So we are talking Psych Season 4, Episode 8, Let's Get Harry. And before we really go off the rails, Billy, why don't you tell the people of our process?
Well, it starts with a holla, ends with a creamsicle, and if there's time in between, a little Thundercats.
Ho! Oh! So this is a very interesting episode, Billy. So,
indeed.
So, you know, quick thoughts. This is one I haven't watched in a while.
How dare
and
you?
I'm realizing that because as I rewatched it the first time, there were several moments, several lines where I quote all the time, but I forget which episode it's from. It's just one of those things. And we'll get to it in a bit. There's one thing in here that is definitely not the funniest thing in the world, but it will crack me up every single time, and I haven't stopped saying it for almost 2 weeks now, much to my wife's chagrin. And so there's a lot of like really good lines. This is one of those episodes where the story's fine, but the quotes and the moments are through the roof.
Hilarity off the freaking chart. They even do a ho.
Yeah.
I think it's before the credits hit or the
yeah.
open hit.
Yeah, it's right in the beginning.
But this is one of the episodes, even before the last 2 weeks, because we took a week off, I've seen the most anyways. It's up there with, you know, Sean 2.0, probably even more, because at the beginning I didn't like Sean 2.0. And I think in the last 14 days, I may have watched this, no lie, 20 times.
Yeah, I've watched it about four myself. 20, not even gotten I've had plenty of time sitting home with COVID, but no, I've definitely watched it a ton, and it's just it's not even just like a laugh a minute. It is the delivery of the lines. It is the
I'm the psychic. He just has a magic eight ball head.
Yeah, everything about it, like the from a comedy aspect, this episode is an A+. From a story and plot perspective, it's a little goofy. It's a little goofy. Now it's plausible. And it's not like it's outrageous. It's just, I think mostly it's the character, Stuart Gimbley. He's a real nerd. And so the story surrounding like him in particular is really, really goofy. The crime aspect of it is pretty solid, but like, I don't know. There's something about like that brings it down just a notch for me, but I have this rated a lot higher than I thought I was going to have it.
Well, not the problem with Stuart Gimbley, but I think the reason why he feels so out of place is because you only knew kids like this in high school, and then you weren't friends with them afterwards.
Right.
Because there are these kind of weird people floating around who hang with, you know, shamans and a healing rumbus or whatever the hell they're doing with Willow, but you don't associate with them anymore. So I love his character. He plays it super over the top as well, and this episode is outlandish, and it's a little weird coming off of the last episode too, where Lassie and Jules are so dickish. This episode would have fit, not complete opposite, like she has no time for his tomfoolery, shenanigans, or hijinks. But they're a little cold, but it would have worked better if it was before. And I think you could probably switch the episodes without any Oh, like, 100%. Without anybody knowing.
100%. I mean, Lassie was Lassie. Lassie's always Lassie. Mm-hmm. That character is there. But Jules was definitely a lot more lighthearted, even when she was like...
She was, but they still were more dickish than they would be in a normal thing. They weren't working together until they kind of had to be.
Right, right. But if the tone felt different.
It was, 100%. But I think it would have been a better ramp up to the other episode where that one just kind of came out of nowhere.
100%. 100%. The other thing I liked about this episode too, Billy, was there's a lot of good callbacks and a lot of references.
Oh my God, jam-packed.
This was a mile a minute. And again, the story was solid, but it definitely, you know, got a little silly at points. But we have one standout guest star, and I should have added Myrtle as a standout guest star, but I'm gonna give her praise in a little bit. But the primary guest star in this episode was Joshua Molina, who played Stuart Gimbley, and I remember him only from Scandal. My wife used to, you know, love Scandal, and he was in Scandal.
What woman doesn't?
Right. But other than that, he's got like this weird face, like squirrely. I don't know what's going on. He's got these very pronounced bags under his eyes, like almost like he had a bad like tuck job or something.
They also go further than bags; they go almost like to his like cheekbone.
Yeah, you know what they are? They're like if you were to take Hulk Hogan's boobs and put them on his face.
Where they kind of droop in the middle because he's an old man.
Yeah, he's got droopy old man, you know, eyelids. And apparently he was in A Few Good Men. It's been a while since I've seen that movie, and he didn't stick out to me. But apparently he was in that, and then a whole bunch of random things. Synopsis for Let's Get Harry. I love it. It's nice and tight. Sean and Gus are hired to protect a guy who thinks he's a werewolf and find there's more to his story than they thought. And so again, it's succinct, right to the point. The episode is exactly what it talks about. And so the cold open here, it was young Sean and Gus running through the woods. And, you know, they hear strange noises that, you know, they, you know, Gus thinks they're being chased by wolves. Sean thinks it's giant beavers. You know, they bump into Henry. He's like, you're running off in the woods at night. It's the worst thing you could do. And then they hear a sound. Even Henry gets fucking spooked and they take off. So the cold open was,
even though fear does not exist in this dojo.
That is a great line, from Henry. I don't know. The cold open this week didn't really do much for me other than just,
it was just a table setter.
Yeah. Like the werewolves, I guess.
The other cold open contains my favorite sporting event of the year. And I know that, you know, they love wrestling and they celebrated it much like I do. I mean, I don't dress up Cabbage Patch Dolls as Junkyard Dog and Hacksaw
Jim Duggan.
Which I love because they were like, let's cover them. They look creepy. But I also love that Gus chose Sylvester Ritter, aka Junkyard Dog, and, you know, put the thump on the back.
That was the best part. He's missing a beard. I wasn't going to face the shawl dog. And then I love how that when they lay them both down, they go, the dolls. Yeah.
It might be time to be done with the dolls.
It might be time to be done with. But I love it because you just see Sean coming around the corner and he's got, you know, oh, he put a little tongue depressor in his hand to represent the 2x4. What rumble was that?
Poof. Hacksaw was in it. So it had to have been
Hacksaw
like
was
2008.
In it. Del Rio was in it. Yeah, I think 2008 is correct.
Maybe 9.
Yeah, 8 sounds.
You know what? No, because what did they go to? 2014 was the end of Psych. This is season 4. So, yeah, maybe 9, 10.
Yeah, you're right. I'm trying to think. Yeah, because Del Rio was there, and then he was gone, then he was back in. So I can't remember his
name. I wonder if it was the one that was at the Garden.
Oh, that'd be something else. Huh. But that was awesome. I loved it. You know, and the rules, no talking during the Rumble. No
fries,
talking.
Cuatro quesos, dos fritos.
Yeah. So... we're at the psych office. So this is how the episode starts. We're at the psych office. You know, we just got through the little wrestling bit here. And this is where we, right off the rip, you know, we meet Stuart Gimbley. He's coming in. He's, you know, cold, you know, right in off the streets. And, you know, he wants to hire them. And he whips out rope. And he whips out a fucking gun. Right? And that, they're like, what the hell? And then he whips out
bullets. Points it at him. Yeah. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't take it and place it down. He takes it out like boom.
Yeah.
which is a nice piece of comedy.
Yeah. And he goes, no, this is for your protection. And then he pulls out the silver bullets. And I love this here. So Stuart, you know, for the most part, like, I don't want to say he stinks, but like, he's just a good catalyst, you know, for the story, but like,
he's a wackadoo.
He's an absolute wackadoo. But the best thing that he brings to is two great things he brings. And one of them's here where he is like, I went to the cops, but the cops don't believe me. And they told me to come here. And when Gus asks, what does the cop look like?
that imagine sent Robert you here. Goulet.
Yeah. Dressed like Mr. Bean. Playing Scarecrow in a summer stock production of Wizard of Oz dedicated to Tony Randall.
I mean, it's my kind of joke because it's already been set up the premise, like where they call him Flat Stanley and he's just, you know, tall, lanky guy. You know, they reference all of the ones from cinema. But the way that they construct that joke is so beautifully done because it's imagine this, think of that, playing this dedicated to that. And I'm going to steal that joke formula for something sometime soon. But it's brilliant and it's fucking hilarious and his delivery spot on.
And he's been called all of these things. Like it was Gutchberg who called him Scare. Was it Gutchberg that called him Scarecrow, or was it Gershon's character that actually called him? I know she called him Mr. Bean and Tony Randall. Mm-hmm. She may have called him all three. Like these all could might be from the American Duos episode. But I love the callback there, and I love that running gag of just, you know, coming up with like obscure, rando, weird,
tall, lanky, white guys in the history of cinema.
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. And so now we get, you know, we kind of get a little bit more about what, you know, Stuart's all about. And he flat out tells him, he thinks he's a lichen. And he thinks he killed a baby sheep. But there was a great line here from Sean where he goes, a lichen. And he goes, lychee. Like this. And
like
then
the drip fruit.
Yeah. And then Gus goes, no. And he goes, oh, like sheep's wool or something like that. Right. So like it was just.
What about Lindsay Lycan?
Oh, fuck Lindsay Lycan. I mean, yes. But.
oh, come on. Oh, it's a family program.
It's a family program. but he believes he's a lichen. And he whips out this newspaper. And he points to the paper, Sean, and goes, D's nuts? Yep. I will never not laugh at a D's nuts joke. Right?
Psych gag in a newspaper is always great. Then you got to turn it around.
Yeah. And so there was a baby sheep there murdering. He goes, I believe that was me. And so he's willing to pay them thrice.
Yep.
They're going.
Certainly not doing it for half.
Yeah. That's three times as much, Sean. just to sort of, you know, observe him overnight. So they duct tape him up, you know, to the chair. You know, Gus goes over the rules. They're going to watch the Rumble. No talking during the Rumble. As soon as dawn breaks, you're to get the hell out of here and never come back. And don't touch the dos cuartos quesos fritos.
Not even close, Joe.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm spitballing here, you know.
Cuatro quesos dos fritos.
There we go. It's why we work, you know. So you pick me up when I'm down, right?
Yeah, I fill in the blank spots.
Yeah. So we get a good little bit of cinema here, a good little bit of storytelling here where, okay, you've got Sean and Gus watching the Rumble, you've got Gimli locked up, and then it pans to the woods where you see two hunters. They're hunting some deer. Those hunters get attacked. You hear ominous sounds. And then, the next morning, Stuart's gone. The psych, you know, window has been smashed, and there's some werewolf fur left behind.
Just a little bit on the thing. And then they go see Lassie. And that reveal of Lassie in the police station it's one of the best.
It really is.
I used it in one of our videos for something. I think it was the launch video for this podcast, but it's a great shot of Lassie with the monocle. Like, why are you reading that? Why are you reading that file? Like Mr. Peanut.
Yeah, right.
Distinguished war generals. You know, I'm not even going to justify myself to you guys.
So Sean's like, you know, why aren't you guys, you know, taking them seriously? And Lassie and Lassie Faction mocks them, and he gives them Stuart's business card.
And they already did. They do the paper gag again.
They have to do the paper gag. And I love the name of the business card. Occultopus. And so, Sean, I love this line too. Sean asked Lassie if you'd like to tag along. And Lassie goes, I'd rather adopt a child.
That's one of my favorites. I use that one often too. That or, you know, I'd rather spend a day at the mall with McNabb. And then I insert, you know, like Kaufman. but that's another one of those like Lassie's I'd rather dip my jewels in, and even Sean like says it once, I'd rather dip my jewels in honey and go on a bear hunt. But one of my favorite lines, and it comes back again, not in the exact same thing but in the same joke premise, when Sean goes, smash through our double paned window, and Gus slyly just goes, it's not even soda double paint.
And you leave the front door unlocked,
right? That was the best one. And we slept what we thought was the comfort a double bolt lock provides. Right. You never lock the door.
Right. And so that would be my only gripe. Now, I know that I've talked about, like, okay, the Stewart stuff is kind of silly, and overall it's kind of silly, but like I didn't have a problem with the plot. Like I said, it's very plausible. My only gripe is that they 100% would have woken up to that glass being smashed.
Well, they did wake up to the glass being smashed. He stole Stewart first, then smashed the glass on the getaway.
Yeah, right, right. But they would have seen him, right? Like, you can't, like, smash that big of a window.
Yeah, you're
I'm picking nits.
Yeah. I mean, you're not a fun haver, so.
Look at my shirt. I am a fun haver.
I can't see it.
You see the pineapples? They stick out.
It's an audio podcast, and he's got a green screen, and he's wearing a green shirt. But
the pineapples stick out.
The actually does look pretty good. Floating pineapple heads for those of you just listening.
And Billy, we got to wait for Billy to get his Dan Flash's pineapple.
Oh, I can't wait. I need like a stockpile of Dan Flash's shirt. I got two.
Yeah. We got to start building that wardrobe up for show. And then they ask Jules if they want to tag along. We get, and I love this little sequence from Jules, which says, I'm not in for your tomfoolery, silliness, nonsense, malarkey, and shenanigans.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just those are all things that, you know, just, you know, right up Sean's alley there. But they go to Occultopus, and I love Gus's infatuation with Willow.
It's great too. You get the little book behind the shelf thing that we get with Whipped Chatterley, Whipped Cream, yep, as well, which is always fun. And then, you know, what is it? He's known to his coverage simply as Rich Fingerland, but he gives him like the Harry Munmore. Like, there's a ton of this episode has a million nicknames. I think it's got three just in there. And then Gus is all infatuated with her and her dark, sexy makeup to hide the pain underneath. Yep. But what they get from there is a couple of tidbits. She admits that Stewart thinks he was bitten by the beast because he went off in the trail to make waters. And the Dick Smith's Wilderness is another. Like, they just give you so many random, like, it's like the thing in Clown College with Homer where he's like, remember these towns, Cucamonga, Seattle. Like, they just throw in like the Dick Smith Wilderness, which it's probably a place, but it's a funny thing to throw in there. Yep. But you get that Stewart thinks he was bitten. He's a little odd. Their father's a demon rabbi. I think we picked that up a little bit later.
Yep.
That he had a party at Shangri-La's.
Yep.
That's a nice little photo
with
plant.
With his therapy group. Yep.
With his therapy group. So we get a lot of little tidbits just packed in that one little meeting between the two of them. Well, the three of them.
Yeah. And so that was a very important scene. It was a great scene because it was just a lot coming at you. And definitely stuff like from the first time I watched it last week to the second time that I missed, right? And it's just mm-hmm. all these little things. And so that's what, you know, I think this episode does really well. It's like, it really gives you that psychness, right? All those little elements that make psych so fun and such a great show. So they head back to this office, and Jesus, Stuart, we get fucking naked Stuart. And he's in the closet. He's naked and afraid. You know, and we find out that the hunter's bodies were found. There's a suspected animal attack, and he's freaking the fuck out.
Yeah, I mean, you would be too, and they would be as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get the, you also get, and this is the second time I believe we get the ladies' man with the plan, Dwayne Caliphas Wayne from what is it, Another World?
Yes.
that's another great drop there. But you find out that Stuart may have murdered people.
Yeah. Yeah, because this is, has gone from like animals being attacked to now the two hunters were found. So shit's getting real.
Because that's the thing in my head that always played with me, and I've seen this enough now that I know it. But you see the murder in the cold open, basically.
Right.
But they don't have that information. But you do.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So
right.
It's kind of it doesn't dawn on them until then. They think he just busted out. So that to me was a little bit a tricky digestion, but it still works.
Yeah, and sorry, Stuart wasn't at the office yet. You know, it shows the scene with the hunter's dead.
They have, yeah,
and he's naked in the woods, right? Mm-hmm. And so back at the psych office now, Sean, like, Stuart's bag is still there. Like, you know, Stuart went missing, but he didn't take his bag with him. So Sean starts going through his bag, and he finds some medication there called haloperidol, which Gus informs him is prescribed for schizophrenia. Which would make sense in this case. Like, okay, we got this guy who thinks he's a fucking werewolf. Yeah, schizophrenia isn't a far leap, you know, from that. But Gus also says it's also used to reduce, you know, aggression, you know, towards others.
And used in combination with clonazepam can be used to control adult hiccups.
Right. And I love this next little thing. Is Sean's doing he finds a bottle of Aqua Velva and he takes it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he says spraying himself with the Aqua Velva. this next scene we are going to digest in a few, because it is worth breaking down and really diving deep in it. But Sean and Gus, you know, they learned, you know, from Willow that, you know, Stuart was seeking therapy, so they go to the therapist's office, and we meet a character here that may be now. She doesn't rival Goochberg.
No.
But I tell you what, this
could be broad, her sister.
Yeah, this broad burns hot. And she's only in this episode for a few moments, but man, she's a fucking pistol.
Well, she makes a reappearance too, which is fucking.
And it was
in the cold open.
It's Myrtle the secretary. Our cold open. That fucking killed me, by the way. That was absolutely tremendous. So she's, you know, she's you know, the receptionist at this, you know, psychiatric office, and you know, I understand the importance of having, I don't want to say a pit bull at your front desk, but you want to have a very strong front desk, you know, at your office. And man, Myrtle she's a friggin' pit bull. And the scenes between not just Sean and her, but later Lassie and her, and then her little reappearance in the bathroom. Maybe one of, like, I would tell you, like, comes in, burns hot like a pistol, gets the hell out of there. She was friggin' phenomenal.
I say this with all the love and affection behind it. She's a tough old broad.
She is a tough old broad. I was talking with a patient the other day, and I used the term broad, and I said, I hope that I didn't mean to offend. I said, I use that as a term in endearment. She goes, oh, I knew exactly what you meant.
I can't believe you said broad to a patient.
Oh, yeah. You know, we were talking about my grandmother. Because it's her memorial service this weekend. And so I was like, yeah, she's 96. She was 96 years old. She was a tough old broad. And I say that as a term of endearment. And she goes, oh, yeah, I understood exactly what you meant.
Okay, that's fine.
I wasn't just talking.
You don't even need to explain that to her. Like, if you were like, that's a broad.
Yeah, right.
that in context, it's fine.
Yeah. So, you know, they're at the therapist's office, and they're trying to get information, you know, from Stuart, and Myrtle isn't having it. But all of a sudden there's a kerfluffle. You hear a woman's voice. There's some shouting, there's some screaming, there's a ruckus. So Myrtle goes in to check it out, but she's giving Sean the hairy eyeball. Like, I know you two are up to fucking something. But while she's in there, Sean's able to, get some information. And then we see a very lovely looking lady coming out of that office. And let me tell you, she's got a buttocks that catches the guy's eye.
Yep. Like two Christmas hams kissing under mistletoe.
Right.
I would have remembered that smoking hot mess. But Sean took a bunch of pictures of patient info.
Yes.
And what they find out is that, you know, going through her photos and the photos on the phone, well, going, you know, through the things on the phone, they found out her name is Palexia, and she was the person in the picture from Stewart's therapy group. They were at Shangri-La's. He figures out, tell me she's not a bartender at Shangri-La's. She is. So that's how we get the connection between her and Stu and Dr. Ken Tucker. By the way, that guy does not look like a Ken Tucker.
No, he looks like a fucking squid. He stinks.
Yeah. He looks like a Martin or like a...
Yeah, he does look like a Martin, doesn't he?
Yeah, something smarmy.
Yeah, a Fred, maybe?
Brian with a Y or something.
Oh, yeah.
Or an I. Y.
Get the hell out of here.
Ryan with an I.
But also, as she's leaving the office, you know, Myrtle's consoling her, and she says, you're not going to be seeing me anymore. I don't think anybody will, or something like that. And then she goes, don't do anything stupid, or do anything you'll regret, kid. Like, she's got, like, that old...
Girly.
Like,
calls her girly.
Yeah, calls her girly. She's like picked right out of, you know, the Maltese Falcon, you know, like one of those old timey noir stories. Mm-hmm. Like, boom. And Dashiell Hammett, right out of one of his books. And like, she just plays it so perfectly. But again, a lot of information in a short little scene here. And then they follow Plexi out. They see her get on the bus. And that's where they say, man, it's like two Christmas hams kissing under the mistletoe. And I love later on, we'll get to this, when they're digging through, when they finally break into the psychiatrist's office, and Sean, like, pulls out a pair of underwear from, like, the doctor's desk drawer. He goes, Gus, I don't think she was wearing underwear. Which is just, I don't know why, but it's just such a great, you know, great little scene. So, a very ominous setting with what she says as she's leaving. And then, you know, this is, you know, again, they figure out this is where they sort of link, you know, Palexia, and that she works at Shangri-La's, and she was in that picture. And then we get Lassie and Jules sort of passing Sean and Gus, because they're also on their way to go speak to the therapist. And they go in there. She again calls, she goes, wait, Scarecrow, why don't you go buzz off with Toto and the Tin Man or something like that?
Yeah, yeah, there's Scarecrow.
Yeah.
And Dorothy.
Yeah.
Where's Toto?
Toto. And here's the Tin Man, right? Yeah. So he puts his gun on the table and then pulls out his badge, right? And, you know, she lets him in. And so this is where we meet Dr. Ken Tucker. And he said, well, you know, he's a very disturbed individual, you know, bop, 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 bop. He's blurring the lines between fantasy and reality, and says he's, you know, he's taking a turn for the worst. So, like, it seems a little obvious that he's definitely planting the seeds. But at this point, you still have no idea that, you know, what's going on, and that he's a bad guy and all this. You think he might just be a bit player. But this is something that... We're at Shangri-La's now, and we get to meet our good friend, the Hot Mess. And this is something that I always remember, and I forget it's from this episode, and that's when they order the Roy Rogers and the Slow Gin Fizz.
Extra cherries, please.
Yeah.
Extra cherries and then Slow Gin Fizz. Hold the gin, extra fizz.
Yeah. And so they're talking to Palexia. She's telling him there's something shady going on with Ken Tucker. She says she won't be seeing him anymore, nor will anybody else. Again, now they're planting the seeds. Okay, there's something going on with this guy. What is it? You know, and we get back to the office, and there he is. He's naked. He's in the closet, and he's covered in blood and balloons.
Naked and afraid.
Yeah. Stuart, stop fucking popping the balloons, bro.
Yeah, and that's where you get the there's a bag in there, like the back with the Halloween costume. I think we jumped the gun on that one earlier. But you don't really find out too much, but Sean puts together basically that he doesn't think that he's the one going around, you know, howling at the moon and biting people.
Right, because we get the medication, you know, from earlier. Sean thinks, you know, he thinks something's up. You know, he really doesn't. This is one of those things where Sean's playing a little bit of the straight man without being, you know, too, you know, playing it too close to the vest, where he's like, he's not a werewolf. There's no such thing as werewolves, right? We got to prove that he's innocent. You know,
because if they turn away every werewolf case that comes to right, people start to talk.
Right. And so, like, Gus tells him, I got a Halloween outfit. Go, right? So he comes back and he's all pimped out. And So we start to learn a little bit more about some of the other players. We learn a little bit more about Plexi here, right? Where she was also in the therapy group. Her nickname was the Black Widow because she would dominate their therapy sessions.
And she also killed a guy, but getting a little too kinky.
Yeah. And so like she got to the point where she got really aggressive. She threatened Dr. Tucker. So he started doing one-on-ones with her. So now Sean really is starting to believe, you know, that Stuart is a pawn in all of this. And they want to take him to a cult of post where he could be safe. And Sean's starting to think that, you know, maybe Plexia, you know, might be a suspect.
Could be the possible suspect. Yeah. And they also do a couple of nice things too, setting up Willow letting him go because, you know, he's like, I can't do that to my sister, you know, lock him in the bathroom. And then when eventually Dr. Ken Tucker comes to get him, it kind of makes sense why he would go so easily with him.
Right. And why she would be so willing to let him go, you know, with the doctor. So yeah, again, it's a very well constructed episode. It's been a long time, I think, since we've been like, the construction of this episode wasn't so great. Like,
they've hit their stride. And I think you referenced earlier that James Rodet wrote this.
Yeah.
And his fingerprints are all over it and all over The Office, which I think is the next scene when they're waiting out front, even though it's not impressive to know when the man's coming out because he took a picture of his day planner, but Sean still nails it with the wait for it. They go in and you basically get the whole case unraveled in there.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is where it all comes to, you know, everything sort of comes to fruition. Everything comes to light. It's just a matter now of, it becomes less of a matter of trying to, solve the case. It's a matter of they act fast.
Solve it in there,
right?
Because they.
But it's not like they've got all the pieces, and then because a lot of times Sean puts it all together just before the reveal. We get it all now, and now it's a race against time to make sure someone else doesn't get hurt.
Yeah, because they find out when they're in the office. A few things. One, that Dr. Ken Tucker has been slipping Stuart the wrong medication, not haripalidol, but sleeping pills, basically. And then they also find out that Plexia wasn't wearing any underwear. Yep. So she was having an affair with Dr. Ken Tucker, who's married. So that's bad there. Then they also find out that Plexia's file has been removed.
Yep.
So that's not good either, because there was probably some sketchy shit in there that would get him in trouble. And they also stumble upon the fact, and it's planted a little bit because we get a weird shot of, I think, Jules being creeped out by a taxidermied animal in the office. And they figure out that one of them isn't there because nothing in that office cost whatever it was, $1,500, like no beaver's worth that money.
It depends on the beaver, Billy.
I guess so. On
the beaver.
I got for one night. but they find that out, and that a gray wolf would probably be a likely target for a price of a taxidermy animal. So, bing, bang, boom, all the pieces come together. And it's kind of nice because it's a ridiculous story, but I can't poke too many holes in it.
No. Like I said, it's a little ridiculous. It's a little silly, but it's very plausible.
Yeah, dragging around a grown man.
Yeah.
Even though he is very slight. But Dr. Ken Tucker isn't like, you know, fucking...
He's not yoked.
He's not Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, and you're gonna notice a guy in wearing a wolf sort of pelt carrying another grown man around in a diaper. Even at nighttime, you're gonna notice that, right? So, Gus and Sean, he puts it together, and so now they're like, oh shit, we gotta go find Stuart quick before Dr. Tucker gets to him because Stuart's life is in danger.
No, Alexi's life is in danger. They have Stuart.
Well, they think they have Stuart, right. So they know Plexi's life, but they also have to find Stuart. They go back to Occultopus, and this is where you just talked about a few moments ago, right, where Willow said, well, Dr. Ken Tucker took him. Why would you let him do that? I've only known you guys for 2 days. He's been, you know, Stuart's therapist forever long. And so, again, like, there's a plausible setup to that. But now they're like, oh, shit, Stuart's life is in danger, as well as Plexi's. We got to go figure this out. They go to Shangri-La's, right? Sean and Gus go to Shangri-La's. She just left for a shift. Jules and Lassie go to her apartment. She's not there. So then, you know, Sean's like, okay, well, she obviously takes the bus. So, you know, we'll see if we can find you know, an intersection of where she would have gotten off from the bus to walk home. And this is where we get our big reveal.
Yeah. So we get all of the things coming together. And then basically what happens first, while they're running around too, hungry to buy the wolf by Duran Duran, a little on the nose for me, but I'm fine with it. It doesn't always have to be on the nose. I actually don't like it when it's on the nose, but it works in the scenario and I love the song.
Yeah.
So the first thing we see is Polexia, and she hears some shit in the woods, and then boom, up here, Dr. Ken Tucker. You know, I love my wife, but I really do enjoy having sex with you.
Tremendous line. Absolutely tremendous. And the way he delivers
it's a great line, but like, come on, buddy. Like, you're going to try that with this chick? She's not having any of it. And, you know, it didn't have to end this way. He goes, pulls out the needle full of, you know, something that's untraceable. Goes to stab her, and then Jules is actually Johnny on the spot first, whipping out the gun, holding him up. And then we get one of the best reveals from Sean when they finally all appear.
Yeah, because he...
Just the way he puts on the beastly belt. Because
he takes the belt off fucking Stuart, and he's got it on his head, and he's like, you know, his hands in the claws.
The way he flips his head up is just...
it's perfect. Visually perfect. And, you know, he goes through the whole thing. They're having an affair. It was going to cost him his family. It was going to cost him his practice. So he'd been doctoring the notes to make it look like, you know, Stuart was losing his mind. You know, he'd been putting him at the scene, branded him at one point. So that, you know, the idea was to kill Polexia with no, and get rid of all traces of her to him and make one of his psychotic patients look like the one that did it. So, again, very plausible, and there was no real, you know, holes here that you could poke at. I'd be like, well, that seemed a little convenient. You know what I mean?
No, everything was actually pretty cool. Maybe the only convenient thing is that they, you know, found her, but you know that otherwise, that's television.
Yeah.
otherwise, it's a documentary on an unsolved murder.
Right. But
it's a great wrap up, a great reveal, and. You know, there's a couple of points in this episode we didn't even talk about that I think are as good as the rest of the episode.
Yeah, so let's jump into the Thundercats hole. Let's dive into some of these moments here because like I wanted to save some of these because they're just again it was a top notch episode and
not by your ranking.
Well, I think my ranking is actually pretty good because like. It's a really good episode, but it's not in the same tier as some of the bangers that we've had already. Yeah.
Like, non-fun ever, Doc.
Because well, the other episodes both had killer stories. Anyways, we'll discuss that in a moment. But, you know, the opening scene, we talked about this a little bit, you know, with, you know, the Royal Rumble and the Junkyard Dog, you know, and the dolls. But, Myrtle. I want to talk about this Myrtle scene.
Oh yeah, she's great.
She was friggin' fantastic. When they first get there, she's just a firecracker, you know, right from the start. And so Sean's trying his best to charm her, and she's having no part of it. He goes, "Hello there, Myrtle. My name is R.P. McMurphy. This is my partner, Cheswick. We both have some faulty wiring, and we need to see the doc." And her reply is simply, "Buzz off, sailor."
Yep. And then the next one I think is why don't you make like my second husband?
Yeah. No, you have 10 seconds to make like my third husband and disappear.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Sean just going, "I don't think we can hang with this old bird." Like a rare admission.
Yeah. And, just no.
Yeah. We've been defeated. Like they absolutely know it. And then we talked about like when Lassie shows up and
Oh no, but before we get to that. When Sean goes to take a picture of the screen with Gus's work phone, which is always a nice back and forth, you know, you call me. No, it's usage minutes. I'm not going to allow this. But like he flips open his phone and he goes, "Are my eyes telling my brain what my eyes are saying?
Yeah, I forgot about this.
And it's Gus nuzzling with Ruiz.
The koala bear.
The koala bear. You know, if I was to nuzzle with a non-domesticated animal, I think I'd do a giraffe.
With his big old donut lips.
We're nuzzling the way he says it. Yeah. Like, Gus didn't have a ton in this episode, but every one of his, like, straight man reacts, we already went over the, you never lock the door, but, like, that, we're nuzzling.
Yeah, we're nuzzling.
I make a yearly donation to the Bear With Me Foundation.
Yeah, right. Oh, absolutely tremendous. And then, you know, we talked about when last year Jules showed up and their interaction, but the part that you killed me with in your cold open there is, so they go back to the office. And
Myrtle.
And they hide in the, they're hiding in a bathroom. They're waiting for her to leave so they can break into the office. But Sean has a brilliant idea of hiding in the women's bathroom. And Gus clearly points out, he goes, "We're in the women's bathroom, Sean. She's most likely going to come in here."
Yeah.
And she does. And she's looking into the mirror. She's putting on some lip gloss. And you deliver.
You think you're ready for this night train, Johnny Murdoch? And then when Sean goes, "Gus, I bet you wish you were Johnny Murdoch." "Shut up, Sean." And then think again.
Yeah. It was just so perfect. It was absolutely perfect. And then when they actually break in, you know, Sean says, "Never doubt the Swiss, Gus." And he goes, "I wasn't doubting the Swiss, Sean. I was doubting you. Just a great, great little back and forth. But I've got Myrtle, you know, here as my runner up. For you know, best character of the episode, because, like I said, she wasn't in a ton, but she was a fucking pistol, and I cracked up every time.
We could probably add it now at the halfway point. We can add best supporting character in the episode.
Yeah, yeah, we could probably do that because we've got enough of them now. I mean, we're hitting a point where there's just about one every episode. Yeah, Sean wearing the wolf fur during the reveal, and then. The one thing we just completely glossed over, but I think this is a good time to talk about, is Henry battling his nemesis.
Oh my God, Butch Selinsky. And Butch. Who is another big time guest star? That's Biff Tannen, right?
Oh, it's right. That is absolutely right. Yeah, I dropped the ball on that one because it's weird because you don't necessarily recognize him at first because with the facial hair.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he looks completely different. He doesn't actually look bad for a guy who's probably pretty old, but he plays a great, you know, Butch Selinsky. That's a great, like, they messed the Ken Tucker name, just eludes me, because, yeah. Like, Butch Selinsky is the perfect name for a nemesis from the Force, and Henry's in one of those, like, you got to hold on to the car. It's usually like a how long, like, we for a wee, where I think actually somebody died. So he's in the competition with a bunch of, you know, random jamokes, and Sean, you know, quickly reads a bunch of them, and, you know, I didn't clock the germaphone, but Henry eventually sneezes on him. But the back,
which was great.
Oh, and Miles McClintock across the way. but the best part is the back and forth between Henry and Butch. And when he's like, "Hide your chakras, everybody."
Yeah.
Is that your son? Yeah. He's a 5'10" psychic detective.
What does my height have to do with anything? My daughter's an acclaimed chef. She's a sandwich maker over at such and such, who never manages to get my order right, always putting mayo on my blah, blah, blah. He goes, "That's my girl.
She's an uncompromising chef." Yeah. She makes sandwiches at Sub-Zero.
Yeah. And she somehow always forgets the mayo on
She always forgets that I say no mayo.
Oh, right.
That's my girl.
Just, it is so good. And then, you know, it comes down to just the two of them. And Sean and Gus show up, and Henry's going to win this thing. There's no doubt in my mind.
another quick aside. When Henry, like, they start to talk about the case, and Henry's like, "Whip some garlic at him." And then again, that's from werewolves. I don't know, Sean. That's all I got.
Whip some garlic at him.
Like, everything, like, it was like he must have a certain writing formula, James Roday, which I would love to figure out. But, like, the way he sets it up, and, like, the they spike it, and then there's that, like, little return by Gus too. Like,
yeah, it was perfect. Like, their comedic timing has never, like, there's never been, like, a joke that hasn't landed or a bit that hasn't, like, the timing of everything is they nail it.
This might be the most jokey, piled in, referenced.
Yes.
Like, this is probably the first definitive Psych episode.
In that regard, yeah.
In having every piece of what makes them.
Yeah, because I think there was a Don't Be a, I've heard it both ways. You know, there was Gus nicknames, the references out the ass. Like, It was just boom, 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 boom. It was tremendous. And then I love, you know, the way that it ends is that, you know, Zelensky, you know,
you think he's snowing him too.
Well, I definitely think he's snowing him, but then they pan over it, right? So he's telling the story about the nuns and the orphans, and then it pans over, and there's a nun and all these kids. And he talks about, you know, he was taken in by this orphanage, and you know, their trailer and what, you know, whatever happened, I can't remember. And he's given this to truck to them, and he's gonna outfit it so a kid doesn't fall off the bed of the truck on the highway.
The one who looks like Pippi Longstocking's little sister, Patches Longstocking.
So Henry does what Henry should do. He does the good guy thing here. He takes his hands off the truck, so that Zelensky and the kids can have it. And I love this line where Sean goes, "Dad, what'd you live for? That's your dream truck." And he goes, "He brought a nun, Sean. Sometimes you just got to give one up for the team."
You just gave up your dream truck to somebody you once punched in a bowling alley.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, like, it was just, like, the comedy in this episode, you know, it was off.
I want waffles.
Yeah, I want waffles. I'm buying, which means I'm buying. So, I didn't have any least favorable moments.
No, you know? God, no.
The one little nitpick, but that's a minor.
That's a doc, not fun.
Yeah, exactly. We're changing the name of the podcast, by the way, to Psych Doc Doesn't Have Any Fun. Join us next week when we do Suits. Doc really doesn't have any fun. So Sean, you know, he killed it. He was absolutely perfect in this episode. Yeah. But runner-up 100% is Myrtle. Yep. She was
Myrtle Goochberg, probably.
Myrtle Gooch. Yeah, she's definitely in the Goochberg family. You know. Now here's the thing. Give me a buddy cop with those two.
Oh my god! Well, which one's the straight laced? And which?
Oh,
one's
Myrtle. Myrtle's the straight laced one.
I guess that would work,
right? Right. She's the
oh my god
nonsense, and then have you said Gooch?
Do you watch Better Call Saul?
I only watched the first season. I haven't watched it since.
So they did this thing recently where they had, basically like a Netflix style 10-minute documentary on Breaking Bad and, Better Call Saul to kind of get you up to speed for the final season. And it was just like a nice, funny way of like doing something about the show, which is another show, but it's not like for real. If they somehow pulled off, if they're both still alive and firing like this, like a 3 to 4 minute skit with those two as buddy cops.
Tremendous.
I would die. I would die.
It would be absolutely perfect because it would just, oh yes, I want it. We got it.
You can walk into Dr. Ken Tucker's office with retinal blastoma or whatever it is. Oh, I'm in the wrong building.
Yeah, and I then took a waffle iron to the eye. you didn't take a waffle iron to the eye, you dumb broad.
What kind of party was she at? I gotta watch that episode.
A wine and cheese party or something like that.
Took a Chardonnay bottle or whatever it was. Yeah. But she walks into there. They stumble upon a crime somehow. I could see it working.
We should write this. We could pitch this. This is a fucking winner here. But let's get into the quotes because there's some really good ones. One of which is, again, it's not the funniest thing in the world, but it's the way Sean delivers it that gets me every time. I'm going to do it right now because I've literally been saying this, you know, for the past 2 weeks. So when they meet up with Stuart again the second time, and he's in their office and he's dressed up in Gus's, you know, Halloween, you know, outfit, you know, he's talking about, you know, different people in the, in the therapy group. And he talks, someone was talking about, he goes, "Oh, you got that, what's that disease where you lose your hair?" And Sean goes, "It's called bald." And Gus goes, "No, Sean, that's alopecia." And then Sean just looks at him like with this most astonishing, shocked look on his face. He goes, "That's the fear of beans." And the way he says it and the way it's the fear of beans. I just can't stop laughing. It's his face when he delivers it. I made Megan watch it like 4 times. It was like, you know, when we were watching Crash War. And I just keep rewinding it. "I've seen every cock on the planet. You know, like, it's the fear of beans." Rewind it, watch it again. I'm just in friggin' stitches. And we'll be sitting, you know, like at the dinner table or something. And I'll just fucking blurt it out. Like, I don't know. Again, it's not the funniest thing in the world, but it's his delivery. Oh, the look on his face, it's priceless.
What was the other one too? I was trying to think of that. I didn't see here the you're still a weird little dude and probably single for a long time. That one kills me.
Yeah. Jail is for criminals, not crazy wackadoos.
You said wackadoos?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Why were you reading the article like Mr. Peanut? Why would you be a, why giraffes, Sean? They're chronic spitters. I'd risk it. They have those giant donut lips.
That's all. But the way he still delivers, we're nuzzling.
Yeah. and Skip here has dreams of a fireman who looks like Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah. Oh, and the- I like that Sean actually was like, what are you doing? Stop.
Yeah, yeah. Because Gus was giving it back to him a little bit. let's see what else. Yeah, whips some garlic at him. I put that down there. We can work it out. I love my wife, but I really love having sex with you. And yeah, so like the lines here, like everything, like it was just like, you know, like beat for beat, start to finish. The comedy was great here. The only thing again that brought it down for me, it was a little silly, and I probably should have had a little higher, maybe like closer to 7.5 because of all the yucks. Because I initially wrote it was a 6.8, 6.9, but the fear of beans gives it the bump to 7. It's definitely in that 7 tier somewhere. I don't like it or have it as high as some of the other ones we've had in the past few weeks where I've had ranked really high. But it's still really freaking good, Billy.
This might be up there. One of my favorite episodes of the season. Yeah. For me, you know, this is personal preference.
It's definitely a lot funnier than I remember it being.
I mean, I think you're for sure, quite frankly, crazy. But what are you gonna do? I mean, for me,
it's Holy G strikes again.
For me, this is up there with Sean Gets the Yips. I'm gonna give it a 7.7.
Yeah. It's our first real big discrepancy, I think, of the season. So some running gags here. I didn't see any physical pineapple, but there was one on a water bottle.
Yeah, probably
somewhere. The descriptions of Lassie, right? We got
Robert
DeGray dressed like Mr. Bean, playing a scarecrow in a summer stock production of Wizard of Oz, dedicated to Tony Randall. That was so elaborate and so precise, and the way it was the best moment Stu had just delivering a line.
I got a bright one for Kaufman.
It's, yeah, you
did that format.
Yeah, he'll block you again on Twitter. I love the Gus don't be that third Thompson twin with the dreads.
That's great.
And you were right. We got a ton of nicknames here, and I don't remember writing some of these down for our Gus Madness poll.
They are in there. They were definitely in there because I remember like eliminating some of these. I think Rich Fingerland might have made it.
But Ron definitely Davis, Cheswick,
yeah.
Bob Adams, Black Magic, given to him by Holly Berry on the set of Gothica.
I forgot he directed Gothica. No, but the way he does the this is Ron Davis, aka Bob Adams, known simply to his coven as Rich Fingerland.
Yeah.
Great like that, like again, it's comedy in the rule of threes.
Yeah.
But it's so like buried in there. It's truly fucking amazing writing, like spot on perfect comedy writing.
Yeah, it was awesome. With Cheswick and then Harry Monroe, we get a nice I've heard it both ways. Thrice, there's no way I'm doing this for half price. That's three times as much. I've heard it both ways.
No you haven't.
We get a little wordplay with lichen seaweed. Oh, you mean lychee as in sheep's wool. And then Henry, father, you know, of the year moment is when he gives a truck up for a good cause.
Just Henry having a moment for himself.
Yeah, you know.
Good for you.
Yeah, and what was his sandwich order that he wanted Sean to bring him, you know?
I think it was
a ham and
it was on stone
rye.
Ground wheat.
Oh, yeah, stone ground wheat.
I think he says no mayo.
Yeah, no mayo. Mustard, no mayo.
Mustard, no mayo.
And then we get some good obscure references. We get a couple of D's Nuts jokes. Mm-hmm. We get a hot cross buns.
This is the one I fucking love where he goes, what are you doing? Preparing to play hot cross buns on the recorder. It's such a great flippant line you can say to anyone.
And they'll get it because we all did it. We all put hot cross buns on the recorder. Yeah. Right?
That and Three Blind Mice.
Yeah. And then I loved this running gag. They did this a couple of times in this particular episode where, like, they use the name Polexia. You know, wasn't that Anna Paquin's character in Almost Famous?
Anna Paquin was in Almost Famous?
And no, it was what's her name there?
The blonde, big-eyed girl?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not Kurt Fuller. That's fucking Woody.
Goldie Hawn's daughter.
Goldie Hawn's daughter, yes. And so I love that because that Kate, it was like two Kate, or three times.
Kate something.
Oh yeah, Kate Hudson.
Kate Hudson. Hey, we figured it out.
We got there. We
Kurt Russell, Goldie Hawn. Yeah. Gave birth to
Kate Hudson.
All right, I already forgot.
but I love that because that they used that line a couple of, I think Willow and Jules. Like, wasn't that Anna Paquin's character in Almost Famous? So and then we get a Hellboy reference. So. Overall, I mean, 7 is a good score, Billy. That is one of my higher scores.
Yeah. I'd have to look back at your previous scores because, I don't know, like you gave The Devil the Details, although you do like that one.
I do like that one. But, yeah, you know.
It's better than, I think, everything but Let's Get Harry. I mean, everything but Sean Gets the Yips.
I don't know. I love High Top Fade Out.
It is a good one.
My mama give me that car. Sean Gets the Yips. I mean, it's not
took a basketball that. With two hands.
You know what? I like this one better than Bollywood Homicide. And what I gave that one a 6.9. So I do have it higher than that, right?
All right, but you're just not up. You don't have fun.
I'm trying to keep my scores a little tighter, William. That's
all right. It. Well, gotta keep something tight.
Yeah. Well, come on, son. What do we got next week?
We have. Episode I don't often watch, and that means I've probably seen it 15 times minimum, is Sean Takes a Shot in the Dark. It's more intense than normal, but there's still a lot of comedy.
Yeah, I've watched this one a couple of times as well. So I've done the thing where I put on Let's Get Harry, and then I just kind of let it roll, and then I don't fall asleep until the following episode. So I've watched this one a couple of times. Again, we get a couple of good guest stars in it. We get, what's his name? Who he was in The Walking Dead, who dies all the time.
Glenn?
Not a fucking Glenn. Michael Rooker.
Oh, yeah. He's great
and
everything.
Yeah. So this is definitely, this is not high on the comedy, but it's a really good story. It's one of the more dramatic episodes. We get Donut Holstein. We get Gus in kids' pajamas all episode. But this is definitely higher on the drama. I think it's a really good story. The plot start to finish is really good. There's definitely more suspense to this particular episode. So I'm looking forward to watching again and then discussing it next week. So with that said, Billy, where can the people find us?
Everywhere. But if you really want to narrow in, go to Facebook, search hashtag DorkSharedUniverse, where you'll hear all about Matt and Goo Trivias, which they did recently. Dork is doing a top 50 comic book list that we all helped put together. I actually had a sneak peek at the list, despite some idiots in the group. I think we nailed it.
Okay. Who are the idiots?
Usual suspects, plus Wes. So check those out. Those are the heavy hitters. Then there's PCB. We're debating podcast times for tomorrow, so that'll be fun. Change My Mind and TLDR. MCU at Home is a Twitter thing, but they're no longer doing anything. But I think everybody does a little bit of Moon Knight somewhere on their podcast.
Yep.
And Twitchers, we have you, Backcracker, and Shime are on Twitch, obviously. And then Arvon D and Keith will stream on the YouTube.
That is right. So, Billy, until next week, my friend.
Wait for it. I'm all screwed up. Frank says hi.
Oh, man.